I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wrestle me, Mark.
Wrestle me, Peter.
Oh, we didn't think we'd get five out of this, but we have.
No, people would be very annoyed about that, I'm sure. Not only is it going on and on and on, yeah. this one's probably going to be quite short. It's an important episode, this one, yeah. Because we're only halfway through detailing all the awful things that JBL has done on his rise to the top. Perfect example. It's a bit of satire here. It's very much like, you know how, for example, Boris Johnson, who I presume, at the time of recording this, he isn't the Prime Minister.
Right.
I presume he is now because you cannot stop. You cannot stop these people. And there is a thing about, you know, whatever he's done, he just keeps on going up and up and up. You fail upwards and, you know, you're a disaster and you just get more and more given to you. JBL is the one example in the WWE of someone who everybody says is really, really horrible. And that seemed to take him to the top of the company. He's helped by a couple of things. He was helped by the fact that a lot of big stars had fallen by the wayside. And Eddie Guerrero, who was the champion, was feeling burnt out. And they didn't have any heels that were big enough, you know, to take the belt. Everyone had disappeared, really. And so he found himself at a time when the industry was split between two brands, that there was a gap for a main event heel.
Yeah.
When Vince McMahon first came up with the idea for being a wealthy Texan sort of oil billionaire, it's basically an updating of the Million Dollar Man gimmick. Vince McMahon legitimately thought he'd be a good guy. he finds that a sort of, people will love this really wealthy Texan loudmouth, you know. Just madness.
Who's the hero of Dallas? It's JR, obviously. Yeah, everyone loves him.
He was the good guy, wasn't he? You know, and it's the JBL character was given to Bradshaw, as he was previously known, and occasionally you hear people call him Bradshaw and you get the impression, Triple H calls him Bradshaw in one of the early bits, that they're trying to just sort of go, don't forget your fucking place.
And that
was in character. It's a bit of a dig. JBL quickly goes from the mid-card to the main event. Pretty much nobody is expecting it to happen. He's an unusual character insofar as he got a lot of heat because he would come out and go, I'm a wrestling god. And sort of he wasn't. Everyone hated watching him. So he'd get heat because everyone was like, he thinks he's great, but he's awful. But then you'd have to sit through his matches. It was just a real fucking turn-off. He was good on the mic. He's really, really good on the mic. And that was something that he needed at the time. He also was quickly changed his character into being a real horrible fucking arsehole. And that is not a stretch, it seems. But he had been in the mid-card for years and years. And I remember watching at this time, and because you'd known him before, you were like, but that's just Bradshaw.
Yeah.
It was a strange sort of thing, but they needed him there. There's a famous thing that happens at ECW One Night Stand where Paul Heyman says Bradshaw is in the audience and he's being obnoxious. And Paul Heyman says to him, the only reason you became a world champion is because Triple H didn't want to work Tuesdays. And that was to do with the fact that Triple H was not a champion at the time, but had he wanted to work Tuesdays, he'd have been on SmackDown as a champion.
Right.
JBL was a perfect example of a filler that was needed. He was the right place at the right time, but nobody really sort of thought he deserved it to some degree. He became the longest reigning champion in WWE for 10 years just because there was a dearth of main eventers and injuries
crazy,
kept out Undertaker and Angle, and it was just good timing. The match they have here is so dull, I can't tell you. this is the rise of Cena, where they take Cena, who is a project they've been working on for a number of years. They've been pushing him and pushing him and pushing him. They get him to the main event, and then they pull the trigger. Yeah. And they're saying, you are the new generation. In some ways, JBL was a good character for that, because everybody fucking hated JBL. So you were relieved to see anyone take over. So the match itself that they have is pretty shitty. It's weird. There's no real sort of, like, you know, nervous covers. There's no false finishes. There's nothing creative. It's just like a plod through.
Yeah.
A month later, at Judgment Day 2005, they have an I Quit match, which is fucking phenomenal. It's really weird. It's a bloodbath as well. And there's a really good bit of character where they have to make the other person say I quit. And Cena looks really tough because he is literally like he's been held underwater in a bucket of blood. And JBL is all busted up. And there's a bit where Cena takes the exhaust pipe off a lorry and is running over to hit him with it, and JBL just gets the mic and just goes, I quit, like a proper coward.
Yeah,
it's good, because all bullies are cowards, Pete.
Yeah, they are.
In his 2004 autobiography, Adam Copeland on Edge, Edge detailed the time JBL approached him when he was taking a shower and gently rubbed his backside with soap. According to Edge and long-standing rumours, this was normal behaviour for Bradshaw when approaching rookies, as he said it weeded out prima donnas.
Right, okay.
Paul McCannon, he's a forgotten man, but he's remembered really just for the fact that this happened, which is he was a wrestler, a young wrestler. They brought him up quickly because he was good on the mic, and he played a sort of overbearing network executive who was interfering in the shows.
All right.
He was there from 2005 to 2006. He went on a European tour just as he was becoming huge. He was continually on telly. He simply left the country that they were in a cab abroad, went home and never went back to the WWE. And it was all to do with JBL, who had been bullying him mercilessly. The rumours that abound online are that he made distasteful comments about Cannon's recently deceased brother when they were all drinking at a foreign bar. The other person who comes up quite a lot in these stories as being an instigator of the bullying is Chris Benoit, which is a shame that he turned out to be a rotten one.
Yeah.
He'd never have thought.
That's the only reason why we know about him.
WCW wrestler Billy Silverman, he went to wrestler's court where Bradshaw was a leading member. He was a prosecutor. Again,
what?
We're finding out these tiny bits about
it. A Few Good Men. But, who ordered the cord red?
That Few Good Men promo changed everything for everyone. But Billy Silverman, he was a referee in WCW. He was working in WWE. And he made a terrible, terrible error, which is they all had plane tickets and Billy Silverman paid from his own purse to upgrade his one to first class.
Yeah.
And that was seen as being an absolutely monstrous faux pas. And as such, he blames JBL as the reason that he quit. He said he had 2 months of just being tormented by him. He said that JBL demanded he smuggle liquor across the Canadian border against his will, which he did again and again. He was also ordered to get everyone drinks on future flights, but the harassment just became too much and he left. We'll see it, One Night Stand 2005, which we're going to be doing fairly soon. We'll see JBL legitimately start beating up the Blue Meanie and splitting his head open for a perceived slight that was done in an interview. The funny thing about JBL...
Why did he get away with it?
Timing. I mean, I think Vince McMahon liked the idea of having a shit-talking tough guy. And the thing about Bradshaw is, or JBL, is that you can say there are rumours, but there are an awful lot of people who have gone on the record to say that he's an absolute fucking shithead. The more recently, when he was a commentator, the commentator Mauro Ranallo, who does my tongue is getting tired, and Mauro Ranallo is not the easiest name to say.
What was the one we couldn't get? Who was the German?
Baron von Barber. Still can't do it. Still not got any better.
Baron von Barber.
But Mauro Ranallo was a commentator. He suffers from bipolar, and the Wrestling Observer had named him Wrestling Commentator of the Year last year, and he put it on his social media. And again, there was bullying from JBL, some of which went out on the network, where he was just sort of berating Mauro Ranallo, saying he was obsessed with social media and this, that, the other. And so there's obviously a streak in him, which is strange.
And wide.
Yeah. It's a thing. So it's always, once again, it's a thing when you see him in a match, and he is good in matches because he bullies people.
Yeah.
But then you sort of go, am I watching something and just sort of going, God, this is good, but actually it's real.
Yeah.
Don't make my wrestling complex.
It must be. Please.
Please.
It must be a situation where, like, you can't always sort of let the mask slip, but it's just like you don't want to see someone doing what they do in the ring outside of it and be so good at it, seems, and prolific, and
yeah,
and have, and nobody having any recourse of like sort of going, look, this isn't fucking right, especially because The Undertaker is the judge and, you know, JBL is a prosecutor.
What's really funny is there don't seem to be a huge amount of people who they say you're a bully. It's the one thing that doesn't seem to be there. I suppose part of it is you're also in an industry with, you know, strong, capable men.
Macho men.
Someone like... There is one story where sort of JBL gets... Someone gets his own back, which is the commentator from ECW, Joey Styles, who was working on SmackDown, and they were, again, abroad. And it seems to be something like the Plane Rides from Hell,
right,
which JBL is also sort of a key member of some of those.
Yeah.
Like those Plane Rides from Hell...
Kind of off the clock a little bit.
When they go abroad, I think everything is a little bit hands-off. They get to drink. And he was talking about JBL had thrown a bucket of ice water over Lillian Garcia when he was drunk and that sort of thing. And he had been tormenting Joey Styles again and again, who has talked very much on the record about it. Joey Styles, I don't think, has boasted about, but has been a story that everyone tells, is that Joey Styles had enough and he punched Bradshaw and knocked him to the floor.
Nice.
So, you know, anyone can get one in. It's fantastic. Yes. It was Joey Styles. And I bet Bradshaw brooded over that for months, just really furious. Another one on a plane, Amy Webber, she fell asleep. She made the mistake of... He felt very disrespected. This was someone he was working with as a sort of like his valet, who was an on-screen presence. And she fell asleep on a plane and he poured a Bloody Mary over her dress. You know, it's just, it's proper madness where you go, you are an adult and you are making a lot of money and everything. And why are you just, everyone you see, you're sort of like pinching them? And,
yeah.
You know.
I wonder what he did before wrestling. He would have been a Johnny Football Hero.
He was a Johnny Football Hero. He's been a wrestler for a long time and all around the world. But most importantly, he once wrestled a bear.
Oh, good. Okay.
In Abilene, Texas, when he was an American all-collegiate, he says, and a bear was brought into town. America's very different, isn't it?
It is. I've been to Abilene and I went into an Airbnb that was self. You could get the keys yourself and unlock the door. I went in. In the cupboard in front of me was a lot of ammunition.
Oof.
And then in the back bedroom was a sleeping man who woke up to a start. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And my friend was playing the drums in the next room because he'd just gone in, seen the drum kit and started on the drums. And this guy was asleep. And he's like, oh, sorry, my brother didn't tell me there was anyone coming around. And he's doing his laundry.
Should you be here? is my question.
He could have shot me. He could have shot me at any moment. So frightening.
Naturally, you know, that's the setup for the story this Abilene, Texas.
Yeah.
I was in American all-collegiate and a bear was brought into town. Just is another world. The match was touted as the All-American Wrestling the Bear. Makes sense?
Okay.
I did not do very well, he said. I got destroyed in a matter of minutes. There were guys there, but the bear just went absolutely berserk.
He was defanged, detoothed, declawed.
I realised the bear wasn't wrestling as hard as I was. He was just playing. I relaxed, he relaxed, and I flipped him onto his side. If I were to flip him onto his back, I would have gotten $1,500,000, which was $1 billion to me back then. I was young and I had no money, so I pushed him onto his side. He just absolutely erupted. He went berserk. He tore me up. Tore up the bar. They had to hit him with a chain and get a choke strap on him. My college roommates tried to drag me off. It was quite a scene by the time they got on that bear off me. That's Bradshaw's own words from an interview.
Wow.
There seems to be a reflective side. I wonder if he's going to look back and go, I could have done this as a nice guy.
Or an in-ring bad guy.
Yeah.
Just keep it in there. Don't take your work home with you.
Yeah. Interestingly, the two... big bad guys, and when they start the show, the two champions, Triple H and JBL, they only ever have one singles match when they're both sort of, you know, established.
Right.
It happens on a Raw.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Yep. It is time for the first ever sumo match. We're going to send it up to our ring announcer, Tony Chimmel.
Strange thing is, there's still this thing about, you know, through the years where certain people just miss each other.
Mm.
It's fascinating. Sting and The Undertaker is the best example of that.
Yeah,
they never actually had that match.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. You know, it's just a strange one. Your bigger ones like your Goldbergs and Stone Cold Steve Austins are things, but it's just that funny thing where you just go, oh, yes, we were around exactly the same time.
We're
in the same company and we never ever got to the ring together. Just a strange one. Just a strange one.
Oh, wow. But...
Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, do we? We didn't really talk about the match itself. I mean,
do you know what? I found it pretty. Really,
it was really dull.
It was really dull.
I just wanted to talk about John Cena's spinning belt. Yes. He had a cool turntable belt.
The US thing. Again, what's strange is John Cena loses that to Orlando Jordan,
right.
And Orlando Jordan was a black gay man who was a wrestler, and I think he was quite openly bisexual even when he was in the WWE.
Yeah.
And it's a strange thing that he ends up being in Bradshaw, you know, JBL's cabinet, if you like, that they're putting them together.
Right, okay.
And you
go,
again, is someone picking on Orlando Jordan by going, I'll tell you what, we're going to put you with the champion. It's
and then Mark's going to draw you. terrible behaviour. Yes, the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So this is the third year or second year of it?
I think it's certainly being televised and part of WrestleMania,
yeah.
I think it's probably about the second or third year.
Yeah.
This is a Hulk Hogan special. Mm. So this is Hulk Hogan going in and some of the people that he famously feuded with.
Yeah.
Roddy Piper, Paul Orndorff, the Iron Sheik, Nikolai Volkoff, Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. and the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart.
Yes.
You can tell that all of the other guys going in are a little bit like... I'm annoyed that Hulk Hogan is getting all the attention again.
Yeah.
That's a bit annoying.
That was my career.
Paul Orndorff, who had a very, very good run against Hogan in 86, 87, they never had a WrestleMania sort of a program. So it's sort of almost like fell between the sort of pay-per-views and it's been forgotten about to some degree. They had a couple of absolutely on-fire matches and they went around the house show circuit. But Orndorff is a strange, cantankerous man. Good wrestler, really good wrestler at the time in the 80s. And he basically... He did a really nice speech on the night. And then a year later, he was saying he hated the Hall of Fame concept. He said it didn't mean anything to me. The only reason I did it was I was getting paid. And then he said, I left behind the $20 plaque that they gave me in the hotel room afterwards. He said, and that's what I thought about the whole thing.
Oh.
What a shame, isn't it?
I mean, it should would he have that? Was that like now? Or was that like when it actually happened?
That was about a year afterwards. Yeah. You know, it's funny. They did get very bitter and strange, you know. It's
Well, I mean, obviously the Hall of Fame has become a much bigger thing nowadays, isn't it? So, yes. Maybe his opinion will have changed.
Iron Sheik is great here as well. Yes. He really sort of like ploughs through. And there's a funny bit where they all come out with a different diva. And they were divas back then rather than women superstars. And Sheik is really, really super respectful to the one he's with, which is Candice Michelle. And they're sort of going, oh, this is a sort of nice sort of thing there. And Orndorff is very, he sort of like checks out the arse of whoever takes him in. And I was like, yeah, I know who I like. The problem is we've also, during this WrestleMania, we've seen already in the ring Hogan, Piper and Cowboy Bob Orton.
Yeah.
So it's that's really a little bit of, it's not that thing where you just go, oh, I'm so excited to see him. You're like, there's that guy we literally saw an hour ago, and now we're all applauding him again. So I think they've learnt from that now, and they do tend to keep the legends sort of much more separate.
Right, okay,
you get a better pop.
Yeah, and it's nice to see Nikolai Volkov. They sort of mentioned the Russian thing, the Russian.
Yes, after his death, everyone said how nice a guy he was, and how generous and sweet, and you know, just a real sweetheart. And when he's out there, he's the only one who just looks a little bit like a confused old man, and that made me love him all the more.
Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
Rocks up.
Doing the introduction for Hogan because Hogan, of course, was Thunderlips in Rocky III.
Right, yes.
And that was Hogan's big thing that he became sort of, the embodiment of the professional wrestler. Mm. But it was also a huge sort of boost for that film.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, huh? Mm. They also have Stacey Keibler comes out with Hogan because she is... It's a weird thing where if you were another diva, you'd be like, oh, OK, well, I know where I stand. I'm not the best-looking one then. They've definitely sort of got you going with Hogan. Hulk, we're going to have a beautiful white woman for you. Wonderful,
yay.
Brother, wonderful. Orton does a little bit of comedy as well because he's now back on TV.
Yeah.
Oddly, that he's on TV and the other ones aren't.
Yes.
And when he comes out, he goes, yeah, he throws his arms up. And then he goes, oh, my neck. Like, because he's been in a match. Old school brilliance.
Love it.
Loved it.
A lot of time for that.
And then finally, the main event.
Yep.
Batista versus Triple H.
Whoa, Batista looks... Whoa, his veins look like my muscles.
He's good in this, isn't he?
Whoa.
He is the man that I don't think anyone saw this coming. Randy Orton in Evolution was the guy who they were suddenly pushing, who was going to be taking on Triple H. That was supposed to be the rumoured main event. It didn't make it that far because that ran out of steam.
Right.
And they did a slow build with silent Dave Batista. Dave, who was not great on the mic, who didn't really have a gimmick, who, you know, just looked like a big muscle head, who turned out to be as charismatic a performer as you can imagine, and a legitimately good main eventer at a time when they needed them. What's really funny about this, Batista, I always think of being massive, and in this match, when he's opposite Triple H, they're about the same size.
Yeah.
And it's a strange sort of optical illusion.
I sort of find him not being particularly tall, like for a wrestler. He's fucking wide.
Yeah.
And he ordered, I think I told you before, his favourite order is a Leon's chicken nuggets.
Yes.
And he had some Leon's chicken nuggets.
I bet he eats a lot of those. He wasn't an amazing wrestler. He wasn't very good at all on the microphone.
Right.
He didn't have a particular look. Outside the ring, they put him in suits. And the suits is a really good thing because in a way it sort of goes, I'm a professional and I'm earning money. And there's a sort of odd thing in wrestling that not enough people wear suits.
Yeah.
Cody Rhodes wears a suit now.
Right.
And that seemed to have made him a bigger star. It's not what he does in the ring or his company. It's just the suit.
He hit a chair with a hammer or a sword or something. I can't remember what it was. He made a chair fall a bit.
It's exactly that. A Triple H chair.
Oh, yeah, that's it, yes.
But he's sort of got, he hasn't really got a hairdo, and he's got his own beard that he's sort of got a little stripe on it. And I was sort of looking at him thinking, what does he look like? I sort of go, I don't like, I don't trust this. And what he looks like is it, when they sort of on Eurovision go, now we go over to beautiful Limassol in Cyprus. And it would be, Dave would be like Cyprus's big, like mainstream presenter.
Yeah.
You know, hello, beautiful
England.
I would like one day to come for fish and chips. Now to the scores. Like that. But he looks like that. And he's sort of, he's just what doesn't really come across at this point is how ridiculously charismatic he is.
Yeah.
And in fact, it doesn't really come across until almost at the end of his career, where he starts wearing mad designer clobber and just being really good on the mic. It's weird. The better he looks, the more confident he becomes. But he is a really underrated wrestler. Mm. At the time, people were like, oh, he's one of the great big men. You know, he's a really good performer. And I think people have slightly forgotten about it now.
Mm.
He was really good, and he was the right man at the time that was needed. With he and Cena on the top, it was very much a changing of the guard.
Yeah.
And there was this sort of fresh idea of these are the next generation. And neither of them really dropped the ball on that.
Mm.
You know, I think they also came from a point where they both loved wrestling. You know, Batista had started quite a bit later on in
life. Yeah.
And
he was like 30, wasn't he? He was like,
I think so.
Yeah.
And he was quite grounded. So whereas Randy Orton got the belt at 24 and, you know, was a bit of a problem backstage, Batista just seems to be one of those guys who just went really, really smoothly through.
He's always very, I don't know, honest. Like, he's always been honest with me about the WWE, but he sort of said, like, I was interviewing him about some film, and he sort of said, I went for this role, and, you know, I didn't get it, and I was really gutted about it. And
yeah.
He'd happily just admit, I was really fucking worried that role, and it really made me sad.
There's some really nice things. He wrote a book, which is called Batista Unleashed, I think, in 2007. And from the way it's done, I think, you know, that there is a ghostwriter involved, but what's clear is that he's sat down and just done the interviews from the heart, and it's pretty much just been transcribed. But he does talk about this match, and this match itself, this is another one of those ones where Triple H just goes, if this is going to be good in 10, which it should have been Batista rolling him over.
Mm.
And instead, Triple H goes, do you know what the best thing to do here would be? Let's go for 25 minutes. And then at the end, you suddenly can beat me.
Yeah.
But I'll control the pace of it the whole way. And there's a funny thing about, like, he continually says or sets himself this thing of going, I can do a good 25.
Mm.
I mean, I've been given 25 a lot, and there's never actually been one good one. But I have a feeling it's going to be this one. So let's definitely give me 25 again. And that's this match would have been so much better if it was a stronger performance by Dave. And instead, you slightly have that thing of Triple H. He ends up, you know, going into the ring post, getting a huge bloody gusher.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened, really. I don't know how he...
I think he's bladed quite deeply.
Because you see Ric Flair at one point definitely has something in his hand.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I didn't really see him get given it.
Hard to know. So in his autobiography, he writes quite frankly about what it was like. He said, I don't remember a whole lot of the match, but I remember that right before I set Hunter up for the Batista bomb, I thought, oh my God, this is it. 3 years before, I'd been a pro wrestler, but far from the big time. A year ago, I'd been a guy so afraid of screwing up, I may have been headed for the discard pile. All I thought was, I can't fucking believe this is happening. So he hits the Batista bomb finally after this long, boring match, which is only slightly enlivened by a bit of blood. Tell you what, it's worth having the babyface get the blood, because then he can fight out against the odds rather than the villain getting bloody and then going, well, I, you know, that's going to cut my head open. And, you know, that made me weak. So it's such basic booking. But Batista said, when I was handed the championship belt, I broke down. Mm. A flood of emotions came out. I cried right there in the ring for real. After he was done, he went backstage. Everyone cheered and applauded. Triple H and Stephanie gave him a bottle of Cristal, which he mentioned in his book he's still got because he's never found an appropriate moment to go, this is worth opening now. And he gave his fiancée a Tiffany diamond engagement ring, because when they'd first got together, he couldn't afford a proper one. He'd bought her something basic, and so he bought her that.
Mm.
And it just sounded like a magical night. They got married, they're no longer together, unfortunately.
Oh.
Before the age of 40, a couple of trivia facts, Batista was already a grandfather.
Wow.
He had two grandsons through the daughter he'd had in his first marriage, and during his second marriage, he became an avid collector collector of vintage metal lunchboxes.
Yes, that's right, yes.
His favourite is a 1967 Green Hornet lunchbox, as it has Bruce Lee on it. The collection started when he bought Angie an E.T. lunchbox, and she didn't want to break it, so he bought a second one. So Batista is big into his lunchboxes.
Oh, that is lovely. I've got a lot of time for that.
Yeah, he came from quite a sort of deprived background, I think, and he mentioned that, I think before he was 10, there had been 3 murders committed on the sort of patch outside their house. Mm. So to see him do so well, and do you know what, JBL? Doing it by not being a bully.
Yeah.
Although he was rumoured to have had a long-standing relationship with Melina when she went out with John Morrison.
Oh.
Bit of a shame. He's
got a big willy, don't he?
Yeah. Booker T once did beat up Batista as well because he said he had an attitude in a well-publicised locker room fight. So look, not everyone's perfect, Pete.
I think they messed up the opening of this match where...
no pyro.
Yeah. Mm. Like, Batista does a little dance.
He does a sort of like a one.
Nothing
happens.
And then
he goes, boom, and it's silent. And there is a funny thing there where I looked at that and I thought, Triple H gave himself, he booked Motorhead
yes,
to play him
exactly.
in.
Exactly. And actually, the way that Triple H comes out the trapdoor, it's yeah. actually... It was like a cool robot. I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Triple H gets proper entrances. They get bigger yeah. and bigger and bigger over the years.
Right.
But very much to the detriment of his opponent. So there is that thing of Triple H comes out and then, you know, he's got the Motorhead are playing for him yeah. and they're like, and he's like, yeah. yeah. And then they go...
Sort of singing the song properly. But
can we afford the fireworks as well? I tell you what. I think let's just cancel Dave's
let's just
fireworks.
Cancel, yeah, because I mean, let me on speed. Let me on speed. Let me on speed.
You've got them already. Well, let's save them for another time. so
let's let him off in the car park.
Tell you what, though, do you know what? Dave will get really, really. He'll be like, oh, is there some kind of? Don't tell him before he comes out.
No, because he'll get scared if it's something. Yeah,
let him do his little dance. Yeah, but just don't set. A fucking don't thing off. Do you understand this? Do you understand this? Do I make myself clear? I am the game. This is the fucking game. The two men, Triple H and Batista, this again is a slightly disappointing... It should have been far more of a dominant performance by Batista. Mm. If you're going to go to a new era, although Triple H is the one man who is never going to let that happen.
No.
If you're going to go to a new era, start it off strong. Batista and Triple H would meet again at WrestleMania 35, the one that's this year.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
This is 2005.
Oh my God, Ric Flair was there as well, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Yeah, they got him involved got Ill, in, yeah. the, in the sort of build up.
Yeah.
This one's 2005. The last one was 2019.
Right.
So that is 14 years apart. I think that is the biggest gap in time where there's two matches involving the same people at WrestleMania.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a generational thing, isn't it?
Lot
there will be
that.
People watching this WrestleMania who are like, who is this? I was about to say, who is this Batista guy? But they're going to be like, that is...
The guy from Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's Drax, yeah. that is the more famous one. Who is the guy who looks like Lemmy from Motorhead?
Oh, well, I have enjoyed... You know what? This show had a lot in it.
It did,
a lot
yeah.
of different things in it.
Yeah, it did. It's quite a... Do you know what the other thing is, Pete? We're entering the boring, sober years.
Mm.
Where everyone...
We managed to get 5 out of this one. don't fret, my friend.
We're going to lose JBL soon. and there'll be no more bullying stories. It's a worry. I can see things like the signs have disappeared. There's no signs. There's no inept rubbish. There's no one banging their head.
No.
Although Batista, last year's WrestleMania, does trip on his way to the ring. but it's the beginning, I think, of seeing a death knell for this show.
We should just float around the next 10 years of WrestleMania and just kind of try and find don't do WrestleMania basically and just find all of like the in blown up quads Vince and all the weird shit that happens.
Yeah, I think it's that thing of we're gonna be reduced by the time we get to about WrestleMania, probably 27. We're gonna be going. He had a blue suit on. I googled blue suit. And it's quite a funny story here about a...
Sumo wrestler's got a big hand.
A kangaroo with a blue suit on, actually. It's a good image. That's what it's going to become. Why? Because people are responsible, and that makes me sick.
Yeah. Makes me sick too.
If you'd like to see us being sick in real life, why not get tickets? WrestleMania is going to be.
I'm going to drink so much vodka.
Alive, so
much pig blood.
I believe it's actually on a Saturday night this year.
Yeah, we're going to get partied up.
So we're going to have a party.
I'll tell you exactly when it is. Hang on, King's Place, WrestleMania. Phil for a second, King's Place.
So we're going to be giving out a number of exciting prizes and competitions. I couldn't think what to do, so I started making. promises that I cannot keep.
Well, I mean, I've just found out last year's is still up. That's upsetting. Saturday, the 14th of September, Mark.
That's right.
Wrestle me I in think Hall 2.
Yes, the same place as last year, but that's because there is no bigger venue.
Yeah.
Although there is one, but it's a lot bigger.
Best available seats. I'm going to click on that and take five up, and then I'm allowed to run up and down those seats shouting, I'm Dave Bautista. Get me, I'm the animal.
I'm going to pour a Bloody Mary over you, and if you go to sleep, I'm going to drive you out of this company.
Well, hopefully I'll be bloody a bit more awake than I am for this set of shows, so apologies, everyone. But we got through it, and nobody died. Apart from Vader 1. No, he did the stabbing, allegedly.
In Vader 3, he was the one who drank the vodka in the pig's blood.
Right, good. Vader 2, any stories about him?
Number 2.
Big Van Vader.
He's the quiet middle son. there's always one.
He was neither enhanced or disgraced the family.
No, he became one of those people who became very clingy like a lot of middle children do.
Oh, dear. Right, we'll be back next time. Wrestle me, Mark.
Wrestle me, mate.
Is it the invasion one we're doing next?
We're going to be doing ECW One Night Stand. Ooh. Fuck you! Rules.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.